The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
Alright, folks, before we get into this episode of Comics Brew, I want to let you know that there are options out there.
What are you, like a radio DJ? What is that voice?
I was trying to get them involved, Tyler.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I want to let you know that there are options out there for you to donate to the charitable foundations benefiting the victims of the recent hurricanes in the United States.
Well, I'm going to say a little
more
interesting.
One of those things.
You want to drink beer and you want to do it in a charitable way?
Talk to Lisa.
Get some Houston IPA.
Yo, this is Comics Brew. We're here to say you better drink some Houston IPA. It's going to change your world. It's going to change your life. And those people in Houston got some strife.
Oh, my God. Perfect. Welcome back to Comics Brew, episode, oh, there it is, 226.
I'm so proud of him.
I can read. yes, so we are at our normal number of people, but missing one of our regular people.
Yeah. You know what's weird? I was thinking about it. Not only has Adam been missing quite a bit, but all three of us now have different jobs, recently. Like, it's all been within 2017.
Yeah, actually. Well, yes, it's all been within 2017. I technically still don't.
But you will by the time this comes out.
Yeah, that's true. By the time this comes out, I will be at a new job, which is exciting.
I feel like that Ozzy Osbourne, I'm Going Through Changes song should be playing over this. Can you work that out? Can you get that going?
Yes, we'll put in 15 seconds, which I believe is a maximum amount. For review purposes without violating copyright. Right here.
I hope you pull that off. I really do.
It should be simple.
Yeah. But like the man said, there's the normal amount. So as always, I'm Josh.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Lisa.
Woo! Yay. Georgetown in the house.
Thank you for coming by again.
Absolutely. What'd you do to Mark? What just happened?
He's sick.
Everybody's sick.
Yeah. That time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all those kids going back to fucking school.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Then, like, repopulating the germs and bacteria through the world. And then they come home. And then they spread out into the people that are consumers. And then it's just fucking everybody.
I was just going to say, like, there's two or three people sick at work. And it's all people who have, like, they either have kids at the age that they're going to school. Or they are kids going back to, like, university or something.
Or they're kids adjacent.
Yeah, they're, like, kid adjacent.
Yeah.
So now that melting pot's there, they're all getting all these diseases. And
right.
I'm fine. So far.
How about you, Lisa? You staying strong?
I got beer.
Nice.
It feels good, at least.
Is there a secret kid that you don't know about that got Mark sick? Or
I hope not. Good God.
I'd like to meet Mark's son if he ever had one. That could be fun.
I think he'd be a pretty chill kid.
Right on. What do you got a
oh,
beer
yeah.
over there? That, you know.
So, well, we have two beers that were brought for us, and they're both ones that we've had before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, have we ever had the Johnny Utah?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Last
week we had it.
Oh.
Last week.
I get confused between this and...
Because I drink so much, I get
confused. No, I get confused between this and when we have something for Comics Through Plays. I don't remember.
Yes, we had the Johnny Utah one last week. It was graciously given to us by the lady to your right.
Mm-hmm.
But this week we are blessed with the limited release of the fresh hop of Bodhisattva.
It's
delicious.
Is that what I'm drinking now?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, this tastes like Bodhi. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. But I also have another beer, which if anybody listening knows, they know I'm a sucker for good packaging.
Box packaging in particular. Remember the one
yes.
The moon one that's in that?
Oh, I still have that box.
Yeah, the
Ninkasi space program. I still have that. It's in my closet up on the top shelf.
Oh, is that also where your homosexuality is?
No.
Oh, that's where on my lower
magic
shelf?
That's where my magic cards are.
Lower shelf?
So I have a Firestone Helldorado 2017 vintage. It's a limited release barrel aged blonde barley wine ale. And to quote the back of the box,
it says that?
Yes.
End quote.
It's a rich, boozy honey liqueur character and loads of smooth, sweet, toasted malt to finish. It has interesting barrel character, vanilla, light char, and amazing lavender honey notes. And I like it a lot. It's very good. You both tried it. What do you think?
It's okay.
It's okay. It's not cold enough for some people.
It was weird to drink a blonde barley wine.
Yeah.
It's decent flavor.
Flavor goes, it's good, but it's okay.
I just like how sweet it is. It's
to be
weird.
Loved by you.
Like normally barley, yeah. Normally barley wines are a little more intense. This is nice and smooth. But anyways, well, that's what I'm drinking.
Why do you hate me, Tyler? Well, I'm partaking of the fresh hopped Bodhi and the fresh hopped Johnny. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, we need to do some news, and sorry, you're gonna have to sit through this, Lisa, but we gotta get this out of the way.
We have a formula every
week.
Let's
actually save that first one for last because okay. It might fit in with what Lisa's got to talk about too. So first and foremost, Michelle Williams is being eyed for Venom. Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy led Venom, which we don't really know much about.
One time I was talking about this upcoming film, and someone asked me, like, what do you think of the star? And I'm like, oh, yeah, Tom Brady. Awesome. And got that totally wrong.
yeah, you did.
But it got a laugh. I hope it got a laugh from you, listener.
So I'm looking up what Michelle Williams has been in, because I know Michelle Williams. Like, I...
Like,
know
really?
The name.
Personally?
Yeah, we're pen pals.
You tight?
I know her name. Like, I know the name, and I could picture her, but name thinking dropper. About it, I don't know what she's been in.
Party of Five or Dawson's Creek. It's one of the two. It's in, like, 2003.
It's Dawson's Creek.
Ha-ha!
when I'm looking at her movies, I haven't seen any movie with her. Brokeback Mountain.
Haven't seen it.
Shutter Island.
I have seen it.
Blue Valentine.
Wait, she's in Shutter Island?
She is.
Is she the is she the wife?
She is Dolores. If Shit. That's the wife. I hear Manchester by the Sea is really good. She's in that.
That was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, that's with the Casey Affleck?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've seen any of that, you know who Michelle Williams is. But anyway, she's been cast?
No, she's been eyed.
Eyed.
She's been eyed to possibly play the district attorney opposite of Tom Hardy.
That might be the clearest hint of any point of plot we know about this movie.
Other
at
than
all.
Venom.
Other than Tom Hardy is Venom.
I hope they go San Francisco Venom. Just get him away from Spider-Man for a second, just to establish Venom as a character.
It's its own thing, so it's going to be something that... So, maybe they'll do the sort of little hints of when Venom was that weird little anti-hero who went around...
It's Lethal Justice,
Lethal Justice, that's the name I was looking for.
Yeah. I have all four of the original covers in comics. The first one is lenticular. No, it's foily.
Well, that was the 90s, so... Yeah.
Yeah, over here I have a Dark Knight's metal that's a foily, too.
Well, they're bringing it
back. Well, that was the 2017s, so, you know.
They're bringing it back for this only. And it's called metal. Of course it's going to be foily.
We also have news that Amazon is developing Ringworld, Lazarus, and Snow Crash.
Which is weird to me.
Why?
Well, because Netflix was the first company to really, you know, make a push into being a streaming service that... started its own kind of studio and funding things.
And then Hulu quickly followed.
Hulu followed. Now,
CBS All Access is...
CBS All Access is in there somewhere, but that's all free. Disney recently is pulling all of its...
Oh, they're still on there, and they'll be there until 2019.
2018, late 2018, 2019. But they're pulling everything except for, I believe, the Marvel TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're partnered, the
Netflix ones. Yeah. But... they're putting it to their own streaming service. There's no word on if they're going to, you know, develop their own streaming only content, but it's Disney's or probably not. You know, they have films.
Mm-hmm.
And now Amazon has been getting into it. Like, they had The Tick.
Is funny. Yeah, I got my Prime membership recently and I watched The Tick. Oh my God. Peter Serafinowicz kills it.
He's a great cast. He's great amazing. Casting for that. But it's weird to me that, you know, Amazon is pushing into this and where they're going with it is. Ringworld, Snow Crash, and Lazarus, which
three
all...
Three post-apocalyptic stories.
Yeah. Well, I would argue Ringworld, maybe not, but, you know, kind of.
Futuristic, then?
Yeah, futuristic, kind of sci-fi-ish stuff.
Well, I was going to ask Lisa what streaming services her and Mark use at home.
Oh, we use mostly Netflix, Amazon. Well, I got, Stars? Just so I can watch American Gods.
Yes. Oh, yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, Stars and HBO, they've always, you know, been... Stars, HBO, and Showtime have already been their own little kind of networks, making their own stuff, but they had to be bundled with other things. And now you see stuff like this where it's just its own thing. I think HBO is now onto their own HBO Go stuff. You don't have to have cable to get HBO.
Let me look into that.
At least if I remember correctly. I may be wrong about that.
I just typed in BG to Google because I did a typo. So let's go HBO Go. I said HobGo. Oh, I'm losing it here, guys.
So you know a lot more about Lazarus than I do. I've read no Ringworld, and I haven't read Snow Crash.
You have to have HBO.
Oh, dang
it. The only option to HBO Go is order HBO.
Oh, that sucks. Well, I guess I heard they were talking about it, but I guess it never happened.
So Ringworld, if I'm not mistaken, is like a 1970s-esque novel.
It's a series.
Yeah, it's a series of novels by that one guy. Not
Larry Niven.
Not Terry Pratchett, but the other guy.
Yeah.
Have you
read... A little bit of nerd trivia. Larry Niven has a magic card named after him.
Really?
The art is a hand holding a disc. It's a ring of, like, light. But it's not Larry Niven. They spell that backwards, so it's Niveniral. Like, it's Niveniral's disc.
Nice.
And anyways, that's your random bit of nerd trivia.
You know what? Another random bit of nerd trivia. Larry Niven, no relation to Steve McNiven.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised at all by that.
But what is Ringworld? Do you know?
It's basically a sci-fi series about it's not a Dyson sphere, but it is a ring world.
What's a Dyson sphere?
A Dyson sphere is a theoretical construct where you construct something around a sun that harnesses 100% of its energy.
Oh, like Tony was trying to build that over Earth a little bit, but yeah. It was a shield and a collector.
Yeah, like, but like literally you would encompass the entire sun at like a radius of, like, let's say the orbit of Earth. And it collects all the energy and you use that to power things.
Yeah, okay.
A ring world is just, instead of being that, it is just a ring around.
Is it Halo?
Basically, it's a gigantic Halo. Okay. That's where Halo got the idea.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, like that Halo is Ringworld, basically.
I've never read Snow Crash either.
I haven't read Snow Crash.
What do you guys think of it?
I liked it.
Let's have Lisa give us
that. I haven't read it. I've read a similar series that came out around the same time, the same kind of cyberpunk-y, cyberpunk-y beginnings. Like, I've read Neuromancer.
I read that.
Okay. But I always hear those two you need to read.
Garrett's gamertag is based on that.
Oh, okay.
It used to be, anyway. What's Snow Crash about?
It's, it's been a while since I've read it. It came out a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of...
Like, Lazarus is the newest series
by far.
Like, by, like, a couple decades.
I really liked it. It's kind of about this guy lives in a shipping container. I think it's a shipping container. But, like, I'm not going to do a good job of describing
it. Okay, how about this? Snow Crash is a science fiction novel by American writer Neal Stephenson. Like many Stephenson's other novels, it covers history, linguistics, anthropology, archaeology, and religion. Let me open up the rest of it. The book presents the Sumerian language as the firmware programming language for the brainstem, which is supposedly functioning as the bios of the human brain. According to the characters in the book, the goddess Asherah is the personification of the linguistic virus, similar to a computer virus, and the god Enki, creator of a counter program, which he called the Namshub, that caused all of humanity to speak different language as a protection against Asherah. Holy crap, this is an in-depth comic, a book.
You know, it's a very, it is the, Snow Crash and Neuromancer are the beginning of, like, the cyberpunk genre. So anything cyberpunk-y, you have Neal Stephenson, I believe William Gibson did Neuromancer.
So like what those two. What Snow Crash was a Macintosh crashed and wrote gibberish into a bitmap, the result of which looked vaguely like the static on a broken television. That's what the inspiration of it was, from a Macintosh crashing. Weird.
Well, anyways, we're getting a little bit out of field here.
Oh, so, Lazarus.
Amazon, Lazarus is the comic book-based thing. I've only read the first volume of that. You've read much more of it than I have.
Yeah, I kind of fell off on it, and I think Lisa did too, because mm-hmm. the publishing of it was so erratic.
That's sad when that happens.
Yeah, but it's a great story. Post-apocalyptic, the country, mm-hmm. the world is divided into like 7 families, control mm-hmm. most of it. Normally there's like, everything goes back into like fiefdom. So there's the controlling families that number in like the tens. There's serfs that and like people that work for the families that number in the millions. And then there's the waste who are unaffiliated and survive off of scraps. And each family has a Lazarus, and every Lazarus is, like, the pinnacle of cybernetics, human genetic manipulation, military training, and
don't they, like, regenerate if they get hurt or something?
Yeah, so that's where, like, the genetics and cybernetics come in and stuff. Lazarus herself, what's her name? I can't remember her name in the, yeah. It's been so long since I read it. She gets shot in the head at one point, and like they rebuild her from the inside out based on the amount of drugs, cybernetics, and genetics that they can manipulate in her. I couldn't tell you her name to save my life, though. That's a bummer. Is it Zero?
Forever.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
I knew it was some random noun.
Yeah. But every Lazarus has a different name. Just every yeah. family has a Lazarus. And it's all this, like, postulating, like, almost similar to, like, The Godfather as far as, like, family versus family goes. It's very interesting. And I love, like, eventually it comes to a war over the Carlisle territory and stuff. And it's just, it's really good. So if Amazon can do it justice, then it'll definitely be worth it.
Well, yeah, that could be interesting. I guess we'll see where that goes.
So, Tyler... Yes. You and I both agree, and I think Adam would too, that DC's really got to get their shit together as far as movies go.
Yeah.
In a general sense, Wonder Woman was great.
It was.
I will
give
that Wonder Woman is
Batman
a fantastic
Batman vs. Superman
movie.
Was not.
Yep.
Yeah, Beavis Dodge was not so good.
I mean, I will give it credit where credit's due, which is it is a beautiful movie.
And there's a Batman scene in it that's like, that's how Batman should
Yeah, there
people.
Are moments of brilliance while the overall picture kind of falls apart.
Martha!
But in kind of roughly in tune with the overall picture falls apart is, well, I guess I'll let you go into
so
this.
So Geoff Johns and Diane Nelson told, I think, like Variety earlier this week that after Justice League, the DC and the DC Entertainment and like the movies are going to start to splinter. They will all... in effect be connected, but they're not gonna push that like Marvel pushes it.
Yeah, it's not gonna be
like, oh look, there's Falcon in the Ant-Man movie. Like, they're not gonna do that anymore.
Well, I mean, at the end of Suicide Squad, you've got Bruce Wayne coming in.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman is bookended with
Beavis Dodge.
Yeah, with like a, not a conversation with Bruce Wayne, but like
it's that thing.
He sends her something and it kind of connects that. He's kind of implying that they're not going to be doing that kind of connection anymore, which is...
That's probably what needs to happen.
I think that's a good take on it, because Marvel's movies, as much as you want to, you know, show how different they are because they're different genre movies, they all kind of have the same tone.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they're all kind of connected. Like,
kinda. Every Cap
they're,
movie.
They're all pretty much...
Every Cap movie cannot exist on its own.
Well, Cap 1 can.
Nope. Iron Man.
No, you can have Captain America 1 without Iron Man.
Maybe.
You can. There's nothing in there that needs you to watch Iron Man.
Howard's. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because he's just a dude.
You're right. Okay, you're right.
But Cap 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, those need other stuff.
Ant-Man only exists on its own if you take out all of the Avengers stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, you could replace it with he's stealing from Stark, but then you still need to know Iron Man. What I'm getting at is if you. The way DC's. Done their movies so far, they could build something like that. That'd be, you know, interesting. Or they could just take a different route and just make movies about their characters without worrying about how it all connects.
I like that they could just make movies was punctuated by a burp.
Make movies. Yeah.
That's perfect.
No, but cool, because I'm thinking more of what we've heard about, like, The Flash and Aquaman and Justice League, how, you know, Justice League was a little bit darker, it seemed, and then Joss Whedon came on, and everybody said it's, like, just, like, lightened up.
Yeah.
The Flash was described as a little more lighthearted in comedy, with, like, Cyborg in there.
And Aquaman is taking a page out of Taika Waititi's Thor. He's like, I don't care if it's involved. Like, we're just doing an Aquaman movie.
Yeah, like, they each director and what we hear sounds like they're all wildly different.
Yeah.
Which, if you want to connect them all, cool. But if you want to just have each film have its own voice and do its own thing and be its own thing, you know,
I would like
do this.
I would like to see that happen with Flash and Green Lantern. Like, yeah. Really bad. those two movies need to exist, maybe like, together, think, but like separate, you know?
I think the only thing that needs to happen is they don't contradict. No movie contradicts another movie.
Yeah.
But you don't need to, like, have this, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, remember this movie?
Yeah.
In the middle of it. Like, which I gotta say, I love that about Marvel movies. I am a big fan of
it's a gag, right? Yeah.
I'm a fan of when it's like a joke or when characters from other movies pop in because I see them all and I have liked them all so far.
So I was watching, Spider-Man came out digitally in another country and it's available to some people.
Oh my God.
So at the end of it, there's that the button scene with Cap at the very end. He's like, patience, and sometimes it doesn't pay off. So that's not the first time that's happened. In Iron Man, the end of Iron Man 3, Mark Ruffalo falls asleep.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, they do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this quote from Geoff Johns on the DC stuff. The movie's not about another movie. Some of the movies do connect the characters together, like Justice League. But like with Aquaman, our goal is not to connect Aquaman to every movie. And then Diane Nelson added, moving forward, you'll see the DC movie universe being a universe, but one that comes from the heart of the filmmakers who are creating them. Which is cool, as long as we don't have that thing that happened with both Batman vs. Superman and with Suicide Squad, where WB stepped in and was like, no, you gotta do this. You gotta make it this way. Because this is what sells movies, kid. I'll have you know I've been in this business for 70 years, and I know what puts asses in them seats. And
nobody
he's like,
knows what sells movies
chaws
anymore.
Chaws on a fucking cigar and ashes it in your face and is like, now get out of here, kid, you bother me. Go park your car. I don't know why he's from Boston.
Hollywood exact voice. But yeah,
you
no,
ever
I...
see, what's the, Barton Fink?
With oh, the, I love
the,
Barton Fink.
The executive in Barton Fink, like that guy. I think he's dead now. I think that actor's dead.
I don't remember who that
John
was.
John Polito's dead, the guy that, like, serves him in Barton Fink, the
dude,
like,
it's
lackey.
It's been, like, 10 years since I've seen that movie.
You ever see Blank Check?
No.
Okay. Moving on.
Moving on.
The last story that we have for news this week is something that's occurring as of
yes, and
Friday.
This is actually potentially important, unlike everything else we talk about.
So... we knew a long time ago that Stan Lee is no longer going to be flying out of the country to do cons. His appearance at like Fan Expo a year ago was like his last international gig, but he's still doing domestic stuff. And this weekend or last weekend, MegaCon was going on in Georgia, and Georgians were very quick to help people with Irma.
Mm-hmm.
So Stan Lee is going to throw his hat in the ring, and at MegaCon he decided to auction off some of his own personal artwork, a one-on-one meal with him and a fan, and all of the proceeds of that auction are going to Hurricane Irma. Now, at the time of press, at the time we're recording this, we don't know the totals, but I imagine it's got to be in the couple hundred thousands, or at least in the tens of thousands.
Yep. I mean,
and it's an auction, right? So I bid $200,000 for a meal with the man.
No matter how much he ends up raising, it's nice to see him doing something like this. I mean,
he's had a
not
because
he doesn't have a past of being charitable, but just because it's a good opportunity for him to do something good, and people are going to pay money for it.
The man's a lightning rod, right?
Yeah, like, that's what I mean. Like, people are going to pay money, you know, to be in his vicinity, to buy, you know, his signed stuff, to have dinner with him, and he's using that for a great cause.
I think so too. There's no limit to the inspiring stories that you see coming out of Houston and coming out of Florida after the, you know, Hurricane Irma and Hurricane Harvey. I mean, also, oh my God, we should be sending all the help we can to Puerto Rico, even though our president is like, it's not a fucking part of the United States. Well, fuck you, dude.
I saw this thing that was a screenshot from Twitter earlier today, and it's something like, Trump, we will wipe, or like, we have the capability to wipe North Korea off the map. Okay, how about sending help to Puerto Rico? Man, there's like a whole ocean between us. It's so hard.
I saw that shit. That shit's great.
My God, it just makes me ashamed to be American. Yeah. But
you know what sucks? Like, okay, this is probably the last time we'll mention him tonight, but he promised $1 million to Harvey victims. And yeah. then a week later, the White House is like, he's not going to give the money to the Harvey victims. He never did.
Of course.
He never did. He took it back. You know?
Of course not. Because he is the worst, but whatever.
How about we end on reviews tonight? We'll do that.
End on reviews? All right.
Yeah, okay. So, Lisa, you at Georgetown over there told me last week that you have a Houston beer.
Correct.
For Harvey.
Yes.
How's that been going, the Houston IPA?
It's been going really well. People are really liking it. It's going to...
is it
going to
be gone?
It's going to be gone very soon.
Good. That's what you want, right?
Yes, exactly. Even though we are charging a little bit more for it, but 100% of the proceeds goes to the charity. It's the Greater Houston Community Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked that because that's what the other local breweries in the area suggested.
Oh, so like Manny reached out to like people in Houston or Texas that brew. And we're like, hey, if we want to send money, where do we send it?
Sure, well, it was through the Brewers Guild.
Oh, okay, so like the American Guild of Brewers or whatever.
The Home Brewers Association. Not Home Brewers, but Brewers Association.
The Brewers Association, gotcha.
So, and then we wanted to get on board with that, because, you know, we're a brewery.
Because also, most of Houston is still moldy. Oh, like, they're dry now. Yeah, dry, but they're...
Well, how long did it take all that to drain? Wash out? Because that's the major part of hurricane damage is... Well, a big part is the hurricane itself, but the bigger thing that doesn't really get enough attention is the water levels rise and they flood for so long that it takes so long to go away.
It was like 3 weeks until it was finally like back to normal.
It's pretty intense.
I don't want to even... back to normal is the wrong thing to say.
Because, well, water level back to normal, maybe. Yeah, the rest of it, not at all.
Yeah, so our buddy Steven lives in Houston, and he would show pictures. Like, his morning jog is along where it was flooded, and he shows pictures of, like, everybody's furniture is on the curb just drying out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually really encouraging that someone from up here in Seattle, Georgetown up here in Seattle, is willing to donate all that time and money to that.
Charitable we are up here.
Yeah, pat ourselves on the back, right? But... I mean, it's not just the beer. Like, there's the hours that go into making the beer. There's the ingredients that you had to purchase ahead of time to go into the beer. So it's not just the money you're sending. It's the effort. It's the love. It's the charity.
So what are the details behind it? But I mean, like, is it just all profits or all proceeds or anything going to help?
The entire amount, everything we make from it, is going to that charity.
So there's no, like, you guys don't recoup any costs.
We don't recoup any costs. We lose all the costs for all the labor, the ingredients,
the packaging,
everything.
Gotcha.
And then we're charging more on top of it.
So even
try to maybe you don't lose it, you're just donating.
That's a good way to say it.
Tyler, doctor of spin.
I'm an English major.
Fuck you, me too.
Well, you may really
communications.
No, communications is a lazy major.
I don't understand. What are you talking about?
Anyway, well, never mind.
Communicate better, bro.
Well, you may have already answered this, but where can people get this?
Houston?
At the brewery.
Only at the brewery?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, like, just the one location, so we'd have to go up there to get it.
Correct.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but the growler is worth it.
Yeah, I know.
And it's you guys charge $8.87 for a growler fill?
Yeah, well, the growler fill of Houston is $15.
Oh, but that's for the...
And that's all for the charity, and that's their most expensive beer, all for charity. But you go to a lot of their places and just pay $15 just for their regular beer. Yeah,
just to look at their beer. No, like, okay,
there's
so you
a bouncer,
go to,
how old are you?
You go to Total 15. Wine. For instance, you go to Total Wine and you order, I want a growler fill of Irish Death. That's going to range you like $12. And everything goes to, they already bought the beer from Iron Horse, so like everything goes to Total Wine. Whereas, you know, you're going direct to the manufacturer in this instance, and it all goes, instead of going to the manufacturer, it goes to Harvey. Or Houston.
Yeah, and not to mention, Georgetown's a cool hood to come visit.
It is. South downtown is great.
It's an awesome place to come visit.
You hear a lot of sirens like that are right in the background right now. You just know that you just... character.
Yes.
But Houston isn't your only charity event or charity beer that you guys are doing. I mean, obviously you have the Bob's Brown that you do every year.
Yes, that's always May 14th.
Yep. Yeah, which I think we've talked about already for 2017, but... not, you know, not to underplay it, Bob's Brown every year. Yeah. Go do it. But you guys are doing one for breast cancer research?
Yep. It's called Hope. It's another IPA. It's not going to come out. Well, actually, it's almost October now. It's
It'll be October when this comes out. So.
Yeah, so it'll come out, we're thinking sometime next weekend, possibly into the following week. But I know the release party, one of the release parties we're doing for it, October 10th at Beverage Place Pub in West Seattle.
There you go. You hear that, listeners? Go to West Seattle.
Yep.
And you'll donate to some breast cancer while you get fucked up.
And take an Uber home.
Yeah, there you go. I know it's a terrible message to send in that sense, but
you're not driving.
Yeah, you'll be doing it for a good cause.
Yep. Yep. A friend of Manny and Rogers, she has breast cancer, and that's where it came from. Her name's also Lisa. And I'm an idiot. I don't remember the name of the charity. but I know it's a charity that actually does...
It's not Susan G. Komen, right? It's not like awareness.
No, it's not awareness.
Okay,
that's the thing.
Good.
Right? It's a charity that actually does like scientific medical research to help people.
Good. That's what we need.
Yes.
That's what...
Yeah.
And like, I really hope it's...
Most of these like cancer, you know, charity companies are not actually things that help. They're just awareness.
Sure.
It's
and
ridiculous.
They are
I mean, the most
to donate to.
The most famous of them is like Bono's thing, right? The Unity or Life.
Well,
or whatever.
The most famous that I know of is the Susan G. Komen.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. But probably Bono's. But also the Red Cross sucks ass, apparently. But it's not cancer related. But apparently the way they spend their money is garbo.
Awesome.
I have a friend who works in basically disaster relief, and she's told me a little bit about how. If you want to donate to people helping out, say things like hurricane victims, you don't want to donate to Red Cross. So it's not actually as helpful as it would be. So and I was thinking about that in relation to, you know, cancer organizations.
I mean, anything that does any kind of like scientific or medical research is so much more valuable than like this awareness.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, here we go. It's MetaViver. I'm not saying this right. This is the charity.
I mean, I think you're kind of right. MetaVivor. I would say MetaVivor. Maybe. MetaVivor.
So that's the charity that it's going to.
Okay. Right on. I wanted to say something on the awareness thing. Like, we live in the digital age. It's impossible not to be aware of things. I would say everyone's pretty much aware of the NFL thing. Everyone's pretty much aware of, like... That there's areas in Africa that traffic solely in the death of child soldiers. Every cause has an awareness right now, and we don't need to be donating money to those. We need to be donating money to the relief and the efforts of preventing those. So that's why you guys using all of your Houston IPA sales to go directly to the community fund is probably way more like advantageous to that community than it would be to go to FEMA.
Yeah.
So, aside from your charitable work, Lisa had...
What's your greedy work?
No. You had the advantage of going to, like, a hop farm in Yakima the other week.
Oh. Yep.
So,
yeah, I saw some videos and pictures of this.
I want to know what that's like, because, like, it would be akin to going to, like, a brewery for me, you know? Like, that's how excited I am about things like this. So, tell me about going to Yakima and the hop farm.
It was amazing. It was actually technically a place called Moxie, which is right by Yakima.
No shit, Moxie.
Yep. Moxie, Washington. And we went to two farms. We went to CNC Farms, which the day that we were there, they were harvesting and drying out the Citra hop, which is the only hop in our Johnny, Utah. And it's the hop, obviously, that we fresh hop the Johnny Utah with. And we also used the fresh hop Citra in the Bodhi's Offa this year.
It tastes so good. I mean, I can't tell you how like happy I am that I got to try it.
And, I mean, they named Citra because it's got a very citrus type of a flavor and aroma to it.
It's okay to hit the mics. We do it all the time.
Okay, sorry.
It's fine.
I mean, don't smack them directly, but
okay. I would just beat them around a little bit, like treat it like it was, you know, owed you money.
Yeah, I just hit the mic and freaked out a minute.
No, it's fine.
Okay, anyway.
Tyler hits the mic regularly.
At least when I'm sitting
over
where
here,
you are
yeah.
tonight.
Especially like, okay, so listeners, I'm sorry, but I'm going to put it over the monitor and you're going to hear how...
I don't move it that far.
It's just rough.
But I do move it a little. Anyways, whatever. That's neither here nor there. We're talking about hop farms.
So we get to see the them doing the bottom cutter. So hops are a big giant vine,
which I didn't know until you showed me that. Yeah. I imagine a plant, like a rooted plant.
Yeah, but they're like ivy, right? Where they can wrap and stuff. Yep. Yeah,
they grow up about 12 feet, and they bottom cut them off the ground, and then they go along with the top afterwards with the top cutter. It's basically like a big fancy lawnmower, riding lawnmower, but bigger. And then they harvest them, and they bring it. We get to see that. We get to see them bring it into the factory part where they separate the flowers from the vines, like going on these like different conveyor belts up, down, getting dried out, getting picked, and it was and packaged. Yeah, we saw the guys packaging it. That was actually really cool.
Yeah, it's like
it's weird.
It looks like Rube Goldberg almost a little bit. You know what I mean?
It's like the complexity of these machines. Yeah, like the thing that kind of gets me, which is this might be a little bit heavy, but. The thing that gets me...
Whoa, bro.
No, it was for real. Like, this... It looks really, really interesting. You know, you're talking about how they went through and bottom cut it. Mm-hmm. They went through the top. It laid into, like, you know, the container, basically. And then you show me the video. Them dropping all the whole vines along the top.
And then just rides this fucking zip line down.
Yeah, like, rides this, like, zip line down. I'm sure they have machines to just, you know, break off everything from the vine. Mm-hmm. And this gigantic thing to dry it. Now imagine before they had these machines, the people had to just do this by hand.
Think of like the monks in like Trappist monasteries that do this by hand, or like the same then, true for vineyards, for winemakers and distillers.
The volume would be so much lower.
Oh yeah,
but still, even just like a tenth of that amount by hand.
Oh yeah,
is insane. So, but seeing it done by these crazy machines is still just incredible.
So what I imagine, like the craft beer trend, because it's definitely it is a trend, and it's been happening in the United States for like the past 15-20 years, maybe. I imagine at the beginning of that, hop farmers were like, we're lucky if we can sell our crop this year. Now they're like, we can't get rid of this stuff fast enough, you know. And it's probably the same with the malt farmers and people that provide the water for breweries and stuff.
I remember. Back in 2007, 2008, there was a fire out in Yakima in one of these warehouses. And I think like 5% of the world's hops got destroyed. And there was this big shortage of hops and people freaked out.
Jesus.
So, and craft beer market has been like skyrocketing.
I saw a story earlier this week that in 2016, the American craft brew market grew by like 20%. But I could be wrong about that.
Well, I was just going to say.
I could be wrong about that.
Last year, 2016, was the first year that it wasn't double digits growth. It was just single digit growth.
Really? Okay. So I am totally wrong.
It's definitely...
It happens often, dude.
It's okay. It's definitely going through this phase now where you really have to make good beer.
Yeah, because people will now notice, right?
Yep. People are aware and they understand what they're tasting and what it is. And
that's totally unlike us.
And there's just, you know, we had this tremendous growth where tons of people were opening and starting breweries, and you're just not going to make it. And now breweries are closing.
So yeah, the
it's finding kind of a saturation point.
I kind of think so. A few months back,
I have an article here from Pace Magazine that says craft beer had a $67.8 billion economic impact in 2016, which is up 21% from 2014. Now, that probably also means, like, job creation and
economic impact is slightly different than like craft beer growth.
Yeah.
So if you go to the Brewers Association, they've got tons of cool data and info all about how the industry has grown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, jobs. That was the second most popular reason.
And also at Washington Beer Blog, I think it was this week, it came out with a whole article about the economic impact of beer in Washington, and I want to say it was $1.7 billion.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And that's just Washington State. But there definitely have been a handful of breweries closed. The one that hit me the most recently was Big Al's, closed in 2000, earlier this year or late last year. They're a really cool brewery over in White Center.
Big Al's?
Yeah, I like those guys a lot.
Hey, Tyler, I can hear you breathing through your nose. Well, now it's not whistling, so that's nice.
And it was surprising because they make decent beer and they were good guys, but it's just, you know, Big Al himself, so you just couldn't compete.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the Red Hook facility, the big one in Redmond, they closed because they want to focus, like Red Hook themselves wants to focus solely on like a Capitol Hill brewery that they just opened. But
yeah, that looks cool, actually. I haven't been there yet.
I haven't either. But the facility is still run by Anheuser-Busch, and they're still pumping out Red Hook beers, which that's an interesting thing for me. I wonder, like, so Elysian didn't sell to Anheuser-Busch and like until recently, right? Red Hook sold a while ago.
They sold like a percent, like a while ago, long time ago, percentage, and they were still 100% owners, but it's complicated. The Brewers Association does not consider them part of the
craft beer. Right. Yeah. But what I was getting at is like, I wonder when will Elysian make that step? Because I know that like one of the head brewers that started Elysian broke off after the deal. But I wonder like when will, because like we know that Elysian still has full autonomy as far as the beers that they're allowed to create, as long as they still make their staples, their year rounds. But
as long as they make money, do whatever you want.
Pretty much, right? Like I wonder like when will it become too much for them as well?
So
I found your $1.7 billion article too. Yeah, apparently $1.7 billion of Washington's like GDP. Was craft beer correct. This year.
Yes.
Or last year.
Correct.
350 breweries with an economic impact of $1.7 billion, providing more than 13,000 jobs, paid on the average of $47,000 annually.
Oh, and completely unrelated, sort of, a little bit related.
Tangentially.
We're hiring in the retail shop at the brewery at Georgetown Brewing.
You heard it here, folks.
I would say first, but I don't know if that's true. But yeah, you heard it here.
You looking for a job to sell beer? You got one.
It's an awesome job, but you need to.
You know, you don't got one. You got the opportunity.
Yeah, you got the opportunity. Yes. Sorry.
You need to be able to lift kegs. They're very heavy.
I can do that. I'm not going to do that, but I can do that.
It's hard work, but it's a great job. Anyway, to answer your question from before.
That happens a lot.
When Anheuser-Busch got involved with Red Hook, like you said, it was a long time ago, and that's it was a completely different time, a different business model. They had different goals then. They started acquiring places like Elysian and Goose Island in the
Tin Barrel,
and that happened in the last 2 to 3 years. Different market, different business model.
I also think they were scared. I think Anheuser-Busch was finally figuring out that Americans' palates are changing.
Yeah, they're not dumb.
Yeah.
They know they're not dumb. And they had to do this. And they recently, very recently, laid off their entire internal high-end sales market in the beer industry because they acquired all these really cool, interesting breweries that knew what they were doing, that had their own sales staff. They're like, we're going to keep these guys. We're going to keep their sales staff, let them do what they want. And they got rid of all their guys.
Really?
Which... it's kind of cool in that, like,
and that, like
they're recognizing it. Like they're, like I said, they're not dumb. They know they're smart. They're doing the right thing. Not that I think they're a great company, but it's interesting what they're doing.
Sure. And you have to look at the competition always, right?
Yep.
Like that's isn't that part of your specific job too? Is like, aren't you in the sales side of Georgetown?
I mean, I mostly just help run the retail shop.
Okay.
You know, Manny and Roger just really kind of, they have a really cool philosophy about how they run the business, how they grow the business. And I happen to agree with it, which makes my job easier, so sure. I just kind of follow
I don't argue with my boss.
Well, I mean, they do so much, like, charity stuff.
Sure.
So much charity stuff. And
we're always going to be fans of Georgetown. Even if our friendship breaks down, we're still going to buy Georgetown beer.
I mean, I like Georgetown. I still like Mac and Jack's better than Manny's, but that's, you know.
So, Tyler, it's been really great having you tonight.
You know what we should do next time I'm here? We should do a blind taste test.
Oh, my God.
And
you're going to pour a Manny's into Mac and Jack's?
No, we're not going to give you any Mac and Jack's at all. And we're going to be like, Tyler, which one of these is Mac and Jack's?
Well, you have to do three of them. There's a thing, right? And that's why they did that with the Pepsi challenge. We do the same thing when we do sensory at the brewery. But you don't know which is which.
Oh my god. Totally I would feel
that. I would love to do that. We should actually incorporate that into Science Nights.
I'm down to do that. I just think I can already predict
that you're an idiot.
That from here out that like I'm gonna make a fool of myself in one way or another.
Sure. That's what we do here.
Either like I'll get one thing right, I'll be like, that's the Mac and Jacks, but that's the mayonnaise. I'll get the mayonnaise wrong, or I'll get all of them wrong.
But that's kind of the fun of it.
No, think. Yeah, no, I'm down. No,
yeah, the fun of it is wrong. To make I'll sure you get things wrong. Yeah.
If it happens, I am 100% there.
Nice. Well, Lisa, I'm sorry to say it, but you're going to have to struggle through us reviewing some comics real quick.
I like comics.
Oh, good. Good.
Well, you won't like mine. I'm going to go first.
No, we're going to go first with Marvel Legacy. Is what
No. I'm going to argue we shouldn't. We should end on that because...
Because it's the worst?
You and I both read your comic.
Oh, okay.
And you and I both read that group one.
Okay, fine. Wow Me. Fantastic Me. Let's see what's going on with Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, my God.
Is it Fujitsu? Did I get it wrong?
Fujitsu. Don't even pretend you didn't do that on purpose.
I didn't. I swear to God. I swear to Yahweh. I did not do that on purpose.
We occasionally talk about different publishers, and, you know, we all like our own Marvel and DC comics. We think Image is probably the best of the three, you know, quality-wise.
Dark Horse still has some kids. I was just going to get to them. There's
kind of these ancillary publishers, like Dark Horse has his niche. Aftershock Comics has been coming up recently, similar to the vein of Image back in the 90s. It's really good creators coming together to make their own stuff. Mm-hmm. And they've been expanding a lot recently. Like I read Animosity from them every single issue.
Good.
It's incredible. So I thought, well, this sounds interesting. It's called Fujitsu. It is written by Jai Nitz and drawn and co-created. It's co-created by both of them. But it's written by Jai Nitz and drawn by Wesley St. Clair. It's called Fujitsu. And it's sort of the best way I could describe it is sci-fi weird kung fu. Which is a totally bizarre...
Which is absolutely better than anything Iron Fist on Netflix is.
You know what? Yeah, it kind of is. So it starts off, to give you a little bit of tone, it's about a 12-year-old... I think they call him a 12-year-old boy, but it's more like a 12-year-old man because he's like 180 years old.
Well, I mean, they all reach a certain age where they become men. Well, so,
but I mean, he looks like a 12-year-old boy, but he's like 100 years old.
You need to
watch
the Netflix series Big Mouth because...
No, okay, so it starts off with the main
just
character...
Just going to pull over that.
I am. It starts out with Fujitsu in total isolation. Like, in an isolation chamber sort of situation, in a fetal position, underwater, wrapped up, and he suddenly just sort of, you know, comes back, all right, I'm done with this, swims back up, and he wasn't just in a chamber, he's underneath the Arctic shelf. And
Oh, really?
Yeah, it turns out he was there for just a hair over 3 years. And you come to find out, this is a person who has honed himself to be... It would seem to be the sort of the perfect weapon, but just perfectly in control of his body. It's sort of that sort of generic kung fu hero, like Shang-Chi's perfect at kung fu, Iron Fist, perfect at like mystical kung fu.
Jackie Chan, Jet Li.
Yeah, that kind of thing, Bruce but just taken to this, you know, comic book extreme.
Did you say comic book extreme?
Extreme. Is the way I meant to pronounce
take,
that.
You just take it as far as comic books are going to let you go.
You know what?
It's what you do. Live and then it, after Josh. You're done with that, trust me, I've done this way more than you have.
That's what I say, live with it. Now, okay, I'm going to say really quick, overall, I'm not sure how up I am on this book, because it didn't really throw anything at me that I'm super excited about. Besides, if you like weird-ass sci-fi concepts...
Did you ever read that comic? It was about making wonton soup in space.
No.
It was a short little Oni Press comic.
Nope.
Okay, sorry.
So we get introduced to Fujitsu's apparent nemesis, who is this apparently, possibly immortal scientist who has been around since World War II. He's trying to create, the most powerful magic weapon in history. Starts talking about how the first magic weapon was the jawbone of an ass that Cain used to slay Abel. The Spear of Destiny. And then he created his own magic weapon out of human suffering in the fires of Nagasaki.
Oh, nice. All right. All right. So
and
there
he,
are
and
these...
he finally recovers this weapon.
So does that mean, like, in Vietnam, the monks that set themselves alight, the ashes
no, no,
of
no,
them
it was okay, well,
like
okay.
another weapon that they could make?
Using the atomic fire of Nagasaki, my zombie blacksmith forged the atomic katana.
Nice.
So it's not quite just people suffer. I make a magic weapon. It's just it's this massive
undertaking. Whatever,
massive
yeah.
undertaking, yeah.
Okay. It has to be like genocide
now,
in order to. So like, there's an Auschwitz bow or something.
Yeah, to be depressing. well, I guess you're talking about Nagasaki. So yeah.
Come on, man.
Now, okay, I will say one thing. When we get into fight scenes in this book, it's actually pretty dynamic and cool. I do like the way it works, but it kind of strikes me as this thing that I've seen. I feel like I've seen this a lot in the last couple years. Where some new number one comes out from some weird random press or some new creator where it just throws these wacky ideas at the wall. And sometimes they really stick. It's really, I read it and I go, damn, that was cool.
Like Seven to Eternity or Black Science. Or
yeah,
any...
well, but those are made by creators that are amazing.
I know, but they still throw like
yeah,
a
bunch of like,
a
weird
left
shit.
Fucking field thing.
Have you ever seen Cowboy Samurai or Red Samurai Cowboy? Cowboy Samurai? Shaolin Cowboy? Oh, fuck. I don't remember what it's exactly called. Because it's off the wall bonkers out there. And every time I read it, I'm like, this is weird as hell. But because the art and the style and everything is so good, it like, I want to read more of it.
Sure. I've had my fair share of that's weird.
I bring this up because somebody realizes, this nemesis realizes that, well, there's only one person that can possibly stop me and my plan. And it's a 120-year-old little boy. And he sends an assassin after Fujitsu in this Arctic research station. Guess who his assassin is?
Afro Samurai.
Literally fucking James Dean.
Like, okay, like the actor?
No, like, yes, like literally like James Dean. And this is why I brought up like these weird off-the-wall bonkers ideas. Because sure. In parts of this book, it feels like he just throws stuff out there just to throw it out there. So nice. At the end of the day, I don't know how I feel about the kind of world that's being built. But that being said... Fujitsu as a character is the kind of character that I enjoy things being based around. Just a person who has honed themselves to perfection to do totally bizarre, weird comic booky shit.
Okay.
Like turn a microwave into an EMP force field to deflect bullets. Just totally weird shit as long as it's entertaining.
I'm going to expand this Faraday cage and here's how it's going to happen.
Basically, yeah. But at the same time, the author's throwing weird shit like James Dean is an immortal assassin for no reason. So I guess, okay, let me wrap this up. I've sounded really down on it, but also like I really like it. I'm middling on this comic. Some parts of it are really great. Some parts of it I'm kind of over. The art is actually fantastic, though. So if you're into things for really good dynamic action art style, this might be for you. If you're into weird comic booky shit, it might be for you. If you're not, yeah, ignore it.
Well, something you can't ignore is Dark Knight's Metal. DC's,
no, you cannot.
DC's summer, end of summer event is actually kind of killing it.
Yeah, I would agree with this assessment.
So, a quick premise for Dark Knight's Metal is that all of Batman's worst nightmares are coming true.
Literally, though, no, it's not like
yeah, it's not
the
like it's like
oh my gosh, the worst things
like...
I could think of. It's literally the things he has thought of.
Yeah. So every week there's a like a regular continuity book. Like for this week, it was Suicide Squad number 28, but there's also a concurrent Batman. What's this? Batman: The Dark Knight Murder Machine is what I'm going to be reviewing.
Yes.
But last week it was Batman: The Red Death, and next week it's going to be Batman: The Dawnbreaker, and the week after that it's going to be another Batman, and the week after that it's going to be another Batman. So essentially, Batman's worst nightmares told through the eyes of another member of the Justice League. This week's is all about cyborgs. Excuse me. It's written by Frank Thierry and James Tynion IV. The artist is Ricardo Federici, and the colors are by Rain Barreto. So last week's was The Flash, and that was actually, to describe it best, that was pretty fucking metal.
Yeah, that's the thing that turned me on to the whole just getting these tie-ins. Normally, I would not buy every single one, but...
But they're fucking metal.
Having read that one, it encouraged me to buy the second, which is Murder Machine. And having read Murder Machine, I want to buy the rest.
Yeah, Dawnbreaker's going to be great. The Drowned is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So what happens here? Cyborg, this all occurs right after Dark Knight's Metal number one, and we learn that Batman is the key to bringing the dark multiverse into reality.
Well, and because most of it is based on, you know, his nightmares.
Yeah. So this is Cyborg's Batman nightmare. So he's on the Justice League Watchtower, and it starts to be infected by this virus, and then someone's being teleported onto the station, and Cyborg's like, oh, it's Batman, it's okay. But it turns out that it's the cyborg version of Batman. Last week, the Red Death was the Flash's version
from
of
a,
Batman.
From this weird, broken universe where...
Alfred got killed by fucking Bane.
Bad things happen, so Batman took a page out of Cyborg's playbook and tried to be like him, and it went bad. Just like in the previous issue, he tried to take the speed force from the Flash, and it went bad.
Really bad,
in that universe, and then it just... Seems to be the running theme here.
Yeah, so this one was pretty sadistic as far as, like, they... Not only do we have... we get to see the backstory of the Cyborg Batman, but we get to see Cyborg Batman take down Cyborg. And he does that... Yeah. He does that with the rest of the Dark Knights. So at one point, I'll show Lisa. They bring in all of the Dark Knights here. These are all the different versions of Batman that come to kill Cyborg. And there's a That's Flash...
Well, at least kill, maybe they kill, maybe they...
Subdue.
No, they
say subdue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the Wonder Woman version is this blue guy right here.
Oh, right.
Over here in the corner is the Drowned. It looks like someone that's been drowned over here. Mm-hmm. The Red Death is the red guy in the foreground there. And then in the back, that's Doomsday, like Superman's villain.
Mm-hmm.
That's been Batmanized, essentially.
Nice.
And they're all there to basically tear Cyborg apart. And, you know, that Teen Titans character Cyborg, the black guy that's, like, mostly cybernetic, they just rip him in half, and they do it while his dad is listening on the phone, essentially.
Oh, that's creepy.
It's fucking disturbing, right?
Yeah.
So this is just, like that's the summary of the comic. That's all it is that just tearing apart Cyborg. But there's one of these for each of the Justice League. So next week is Green Lanterns. And then the week after that is Aquaman's. And the week after that is Wonder Woman's. And then the week after that is finally the Batman Who Laughs is the Joker's is taking out Batman. It's going to be so fucking cool.
Yeah, it's so far, I like...
These don't disappoint so far.
Well, the thing that I like about these little tie-ins, at least the two we've had so far, is they've done the thing that I
gotta show Lisa. This is the Joker Batman, the Batman Who Laughs.
It's fucking Hellraiser Batman.
It is. So, like, if you can see, like, his smile in there and stuff. And the Batman Who Laughs has, like, Robins, like, on leashes.
On chains.
They're chains. But they're chained to him. Like, they're his dogs.
I like how the text is white on black.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely,
like
right?
Like in Sandman, yeah. That's awesome.
The thing I like about
right
these...
Here? Yeah, the Cyborg stuff? Yeah. You should see that. I'll see if I can find the Bat Who Laughs dialogue.
Do you listen to heavy metal when you read it?
Sometimes. I was actually listening to Metallica when I was reading this one.
Well, when I picked
the Bat
Who
Laughs has this red on black text.
You should listen to Red Fang.
Red Fang.
They're pretty red.
Okay. Then that means you should listen to Blind Guardian.
Blind Guardian.
Because they are pretty rad. They do stuff based around The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Cool. Kind of like Led Zeppelin?
A little bit, but a little bit harder, a little bit faster. Blind Guardian. They're a German epic metal, I think is what they're called. But I highly recommend getting the tie-ins for Dark Knight's
metal.
Yeah,
no,
not to.
They do what I like about tie-ins, which is to give you a little bit more about the main event.
Mm-hmm.
But they also don't do what I hate about tie-ins, which is not progress it at all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're not necessary. At least so far, but like you get to see what are these main characters doing
so far
directly in relation to the main event. It's not like necessary, but it's not a side story either.
So far,
which
every,
is a weird
so
category
far,
to explain.
Yeah, but so far every tie-in, every like the Red Death and Murder Machine, it's all been like this takes place after Dark Knight's Metal number one, and that's it. That's all you need.
But it's not like what I'm getting
like,
is
you don't
it's
have
not
to
like
read this. Yeah,
this isn't the story of some weird ancillary characters who will have no effect on the outcome of the story. Metal is a Batman and the Justice League story, and what we get so far is what happens to some of the other members of the Justice League at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe you don't need to read it to get the main story, but having read it, you see, okay, that's where they were right here.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like, and it's not necessary, but it fleshes it out and gives you more background. And at the same time, they've both been very entertaining. So,
and then, like, the concurrent story with Nightwing and the Suicide Squad, it's just a group of characters led by Damian and Nightwing moving through Gotham towards the Challenger's Mountain. So, like, the first week it was Riddler's cone, and then this week it was, and then the week after that it was Mr. Freeze's, and then this week it was Poison Ivy's, and then next week I think it's the Mad Hatter.
Well, have fun with that, because I'm not reading those. I'm just reading...
They're good, though.
I'm just reading the Evil Batman books.
Like, Stefan Sejic did Suicide Squad.
Is it Sepjic? Sepjic?
Either way, it was fucking amazing. It was, like, well-drawn, well-written. It was fantastic. He's also doing the Aquaman stuff.
Oh.
So I think I've seen art.
I think I've seen art from his Aquaman stuff. I like him as an artist.
So, Tyler, lead us into Marvel Legacy, and we can get out of here tonight.
So, just like DC did, Rebirth.
Oh my God, they did the same shit. The same thing.
No, they totally did. So Marvel's been touting this for a while to come after their Secret Empire book as sort of a new starting point for the Marvel Universe. Not like a new starting point, but just like here's where we're gonna shoot things off from this spot. Now, Legacy comes in the wake of Secret Empire, which was when there was an evil Nazi Hydra Captain America and everything was all fucked up. And we're going to get to... Hold on one second. Like, when there's all this evil shit going on, and now Legacy is the kind of new rebirth of the Marvel Universe.
It's the antibiotic, the Band-Aid, the fixing of the problem.
Yeah, like, this is the flip side of it. We're going to shoot the other way. And so this is like...
We're going to do Rebirth!
Yeah, like, I was just going to say, like, Rebirth took off many, like, a huge amount of different plot threads and sort of stuck them into one book with an overarching narrative, like, talking over all of it. And so has Marvel done with Marvel Legacy number one. There is a narrator who narrates over many eras and many locations.
And it's Valeria. It's Valeria Richards.
Well, that was going to be one of my spoilers, but yes, it is Valeria.
And Franklin's Richards there with her. And the hand imprint they see is the...
So without actually spoiling everything that it goes over, I do kind of want to mention...
Logan's back.
Well, that. Now, I was going to... Okay, what I'm spoiling is I'm not going to detail the events of the book, but I want to quickly go over the eras and locations. Because it starts off in 1 million years BC, where they've already talked about, I believe it's Brubaker. Is Brubaker writing this? Or is it Jason Aaron?
Jason Aaron wrote this comic.
Jason Aaron. Well, no. Who's going to be writing Avengers 1 million BC?
Oh, good question. I
think it is Aaron.
Okay.
But we get Odin as a young godling. Phoenix, and the possibly the first Phoenix host on Earth, as they discuss what they're going to do about a certain enemy, along with their teammates, Black Panther, Star Brand, the first Iron Fist, and Agamotto, and the first Ghost Rider. Like, the first sort of Avengers team, and a Celestial, a member of the first host. Which, if you want to get deep into, like, weird Marvel lore, the first host would be the first bunch of Celestials to come to Earth. We also get, Oh, goodness. I believe they tell us where it is. In Cape Town, South Africa.
Yep. I love that Robbie's like, did I drive to South Africa?
Yeah, the new Ghost Rider meets with the
last time I was in, last time I remember, I was in East LA, Holmes, and now I'm in South Africa.
He shows up randomly in South Africa. He's the newest Ghost Rider and meets with the latest Star Brand. We cut to a S.H.I.E.L.D. storage facility, which S.H.I.E.L.D. is being decommissioned after Secret Empire, where Loki has loosed some frost giants to recover a box. Item 4-1939, which is not on any ledger. It's not on any inventory list.
It's also just April 1939, which was like the birth of Timely Comics, which
that's what I was going to get to. Yeah. But yeah, nice little Easter egg there. It's a box that is not on any list or any inventory item, but it is in this S.H.I.E.L.D. storage facility. The Frost Giants are after it, and so is somebody else who we'll get to in a bit. So there's a bunch of different plot threads running through. Also, in addition to that, we get to see Captain America going across the country in the wake of, well, his doppelganger taking over America.
Do you remember in the New 52 there was Superman Grounded?
It's kind of like that.
Where Superman just, instead of flying across America, he took like a walking tour of America.
Yeah, that was such
America.
A garbage story.
It was actually pretty cool, dude, because he ran into the Flash.
It was bad.
Great. It was amazing. You can shut your fucking mouth.
It was real bad.
No, I'm tired of hearing your bullshit, Tyler.
what I'm getting is we get like a page of these like founding Avengers. Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, and then we get
Iron Man's gone.
Yeah, Iron Man's body has disappeared. Well, I say body, it sounds like he's a corpse, but he's not. He's in a coma, but it's gone.
Iron Man's coma-ridden body.
Most of this comic is these characters that you see in, their current-day counterparts that you saw as 1 million BC Avengers.
Yeah, it's all this, it's literally legacy characters.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it really hammers home this sort of, like, legacy, because besides that, besides the 1 million BC and Ghost Rider meaning Starbrand, the biggest section of the book is... The
Thor and Cap and
Thor, Cap and Cap and
Ironheart, yeah,
stopping these Frost Giants from stealing this box in this Shield Torch facility. But it's Sam Wilson as Captain America, Rory Williams as
Riri Williams.
You're right, it is Riri. Fuck, Riri Williams as Ironheart and Jane Foster as Thor. It's like
the next legacy.
Yeah, like the latest people to carry these mantles.
There's a thing in here that Jason Aaron threw in, and he goes, when he's describing Lady Thor, Jane Foster may be dying of cancer, but there's nothing to say that you can't have fun while you're going out of this world.
Yeah.
And she Lady Thor is like, we're gonna fuck these Frost Giants up, and then goddammit, we're gonna drink some mead, and I'm gonna make out with Captain America at the end of this. And at the end of the book, if you look, they're all drinking mead. Ironheart's kind of like the third wheel, and Captain America and Lady Thor are making out.
The Jane Foster
story is probably the best thing to come out of Marvel recently.
Yeah,
her or Kamala Khan
to start with, but I just love when they actually mix things up and do something that's not just like, hey, we did it different. Like, no, they actually do an interesting story with it.
Jane Foster's story is amazing in the Mighty Thor. It's actually fucking brilliant. And then like
it's going to end tragically when she dies of cancer. Unfortunately,
it will be terrible. But like her story so far is just it's super inspiring.
So kind of moving on. Like, some of the other things we hit. Because
Logan's back.
Well, we're going to get to that. Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm are back.
That was such a fucking cool page. Such a cool page. Show Lisa the page with Johnny.
Hey, this is the only page. They talk about how, like, you know what? People need us. And he shoots up a flare with a four. Fantastic Four symbol.
It's like a that's a legacy thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly.
Like Johnny Storm used to fly and do that, and then Thing has got the flare that just does it automatically.
And we also get a intergalactic cut with something totally out of goddamn left field. The Intergalactic Empire of Wakanda.
Yep.
Apparently,
if you actually read World of Wakanda, this is not a surprise.
Yeah, it's just
Black Panther's got a thing going on right now. And it's been hinted at in Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther, and also his World of Wakanda stuff is going on. But this, if you're just now finding out about it, this is probably a big revelation.
Yeah, so it's...
But there's like an intergalactic like empire of Wakanda that spans across worlds, which is even more... I don't know, intriguing about the nation
Which
of
makes
Wakanda?
It, you know, it's intriguing, but it also makes it really infuriating that Wakanda gets, you know, like, flooded by Atlantis and all this shit. Like, no, fuck that. They have an interstellar empire, apparently.
We'll just make them the Shi'ar, because...
Yeah, so whatever. I guess we'll see where that goes. Could be interesting. No, but the thing you keep bringing up...
Logan's back.
The Frost Giants were in this facility to get this package, which, fucking spoilers... It's an Infinity
it's Logan,
Stone.
No.
It's an Infinity Gem, as it used to be in the comics.
It's a gem.
It's a gem in the comics. Stone, if you're a fan of the movies. And if I had to put money, I'd say they're going to start calling them
stones
from now on.
Yeah.
But
why does Logan have, like, this intimate relationship with the Blue Stone?
Well, the other part that is really interesting in Legacy is young Jean Grey goes to the...
To see Logan.
To see Logan's...
Logan's, like, adamantium... Like, dead
adamantium-covered body. He's not there anymore. It's cracked open.
Oh, yeah. Show her the coffin.
So he died covered in adamantium there, and it just... She goes to visit it, and it's cracked half open.
That's awesome.
And he's just
like
out.
A cocoon.
So this is probably the biggest... Most of Rebirth is just like, let's check in with these characters.
Rebirth?
I said Rebirth, you but did, it's Rebirth. It's essentially what it is.
It is,
the exact same thing.
Except there's not most a... of Legacy. Like, in Rebirth, Wally was the, like, character that threaded the story.
This
so
is
there's
a
no,
person.
Like, threaded story. No, there isn't, though. There's
a narrator.
Yeah, but Wally was the... Like,
okay,
he was
you're right.
Actively
the narrator doesn't jump into each story in this. Yeah. She just... talks thematically about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wonder who the narrator is the whole time.
But
you find out it's Valeria Doom, and
yeah. So Logan, the original Wolverine, the younger one, not the old man Logan, is back.
And Chris was right. 3 years. It took 3 years to bring him back.
Well, if I remember right, Bleeding Cool said something about that he was going to die, and it'd be about 3 years he'd come back. I kind of want to, like, scroll through their archives, because they fucking called
you
it.
You kind of want to, but you're at the same time, like, I'm not going to do that.
No, I'm not. But like you mentioned, the narrator is Valeria Richards.
Mm-hmm. So the kids of the Richards family, the Franklin and Valeria Richards, they're, like, the progeny of the Marvel Universe. They are the future, and they are the smartest, most powerful people ever to be created. Like, Franklin Richards essentially can make worlds whenever he wants. And
well, he is like
Valeria,
a reality shaper.
Yeah, and Valeria Richards is essentially like Doom meets Franklin, Reed Richards. That's like her character.
She has no superpowers beyond being an unbelievable genius.
so their intellect meets, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's got to be a superpower. Like,
yeah,
you have
so,
unchecked
so those two are coming back. So I guess without spoiling the events, that's all the characters that show up and what we kind of see in Rebirth. Fuck, I did it again. I was just going to say it's Legacy, but it's basically Rebirth.
It is, though, because
like,
we've seen
this so many times.
But what I love is
like
that
one
it's always
does it, the other company does it.
It's all in the last 10 years. It's been DC that starts it first.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I'll give him that 100%.
DC does it first, and then Marvel's like, we can do it better.
Batman gets shot through time. Captain America gets
shot through
time.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So
DC, everybody's like the evil takes over the world. Oh shit, Hydra takes over the world. Like it,
forever evil and all that shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, it's done that, and you know, depending on the event, it's different as to which company maybe did it better. But at this point. If you have a,
I will stand by. I will stand by. Forever Evil did it better.
Oh no, yeah, definitely did. Forever Evil was amazing, but
well, amazing compared to Secret Empire.
Yeah,
because none of that was amazing.
Came years later, and it was terrible.
Yeah,
but as far as
House of M did it better.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Civil War did it better.
Yes.
Blackest Night did it better though. Then Fear Itself.
Marvel.
Blackest Night did it better than Fear Itself.
Okay, you might be right on that bit. I don't know if I would compare Blackest Night to Fear Itself.
I don't think there's another one that could fit.
No, they never really did that bit of DC. There wasn't that kind of Marvel parallel to Blackest Night. But
it was close.
Kind of. Well, you know, that's neither here nor there. What I was getting at
we're talking
is...
about, like, they changed heroes with Thor powers, right? They changed heroes with Green Lantern powers.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. They deputize heroes with another one's powers. I'll grant you that. In which case, Blackest Night
did
it better. way better. Yes, I'll give you that one.
I don't often get one over on Tyler. So this is
what
a
I was
good
getting
time.
At
this
is
a good night.
This is the first time that I can remember where one company did something that is like a. Sort of line-wide, here is a new starting point, and we're not just starting it with a banner at the top of our comics. We're starting with a one-shot number one,
mm-hmm.
and then a year later, the other one does it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's actually a great point. Like, Rebirth is still a banner title.
It's a banner, but
yeah.
It started with Rebirth 1. Mm-hmm. And before that, there wasn't any of these hints. It was like,
now
it's Rebirth, all these weird changes, and like in Rebirth 1, we saw
now it's just like the banner that is challenging that is the Dark Knights metal thing.
Well, but that's, you know, we're going to replace that soon. But what I'm getting at is like, Rebirth 1 started with a bunch of different random stories of DC characters, threaded through with one main line, and we've seen these stories play out in the last year or so of DC Comics.
They've been pretty good, dude.
For the most part. And Marvel has now put out Legacy. Their own Rebirth 1, which is Legacy number 1, which is a bunch of random snapshots of Marvel Comics with a couple through lines, an overall narrator. And if you look at solicits coming up, this is where these stories are going.
And they brought back...
This is like the most direct copy we've ever seen.
They brought back Legacy numbering. They brought back...
Yes! Just like DC did.
They've also said that, like, every... Like, the difference is, every issue is an event is, like, Marvel's tagline for this.
Oh, God.
And so, at the end of... If you look at the end of Legacy, they have a checklist of everything you should read for Legacy.
Let's take a look-see. Oh, yeah.
No,
Marvel
yeah,
Legacy
Look at that. That's ridiculous. That is a ridiculous checklist.
Is it a two-page checklist or just a one?
It is...
It's just a one-page.
It's ridiculous, though, because it's...
Well, this
like,
is the beginning of it, so I'm sure next month we'll get more.
It's ridiculous, though. They check, like... They're like, hey, check out everything we publish. All right,
so, okay. We should wrap this up. I will say, as much as we're joking, like this is... Exactly.
It's actually a pretty good comic.
No, yeah. As much as we think this is exactly what DC did, there's a lot in this that I did like.
Logan's back.
I was saying, oh yeah, I like Logan being back. Well, because we know he's going to come back eventually, and he's coming back just a little bit before adult Jean Grey does.
And I like that baby Jean Grey noticed that. Not baby, but young Jean Grey. She's like, "Welcome back, old friend." And like the whole story is reminiscent of the million BC characters, right? Except for Logan. Logan is the only outlier from. There's an old Ghost Rider. There's an old Thor. There's an old Jean Grey or Phoenix. There's an old
Black
Hulk
Panther.
Or Starbrand. There's an old
Black the big strong character.
So I'm pretty sure Starbrand's old school was also Hulk, but that could just be.
It's inspired by. I would think because it's
calls
a Neanderthal.
He also calls himself Gruck. Like, that's a one-word phrase.
Yeah, Grunk.
also, like, there's they tease the return to Sakaar. They tease
there's some retcon to Aventress history, one of the founding members.
Oh, yeah, Jarvis notices the statue difference.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of weird little hints that I'm curious to follow up on. But a big chunk of it is the Ghost Rider Starbrand fight. And the Celestial from the beginning
reactivates Calls the First Host.
Yeah, which if you are a giant nerd like I am, and
a
giant Jack Kirby fan,
you're not that big.
Yeah, I'm not quite. But Jack Kirby created the Celestials, and the whole idea was that they come to Earth multiple times, and they have they're hosts, like the hosts of Celestials, the next wave that come to bring about change. They always mention the final host. And this is, like, the final host. It's just weird to me that they're finally bringing this back a decade and a half after it was ever mentioned before. You know, I like Rebirth. And I like Legacy. I'm just curious
I was wondering if you meant Legacy.
No, that time I actually meant to say it. I like them for different reasons.
But they're the same thing.
But they're the same thing. The things I liked in Rebirth are not the same things that I liked in Legacy,
and
as far as issue ones go.
All right, to end this, I want to point back to a speech given by the CEO of Image.
Oh, boy.
And he said about 3 years ago that comics need to stop recycling themselves. Like, the big two are going to fail if they continue to just play off of one another and recycle themselves in a different way. We need to expand, think outside the box. We need to actually start attracting new readers because of the content we're creating, not because of the intrigue that we're creating.
Well, that's why we need Image.
It is why we need Image. And that's why Eric Stevenson, that's the guy's name.
Yep.
I'm always enthused to hear or read a new speech or blog that guy does, because you're just like, yes, you are correct. Thank you, guru of comics. But it's still kind of disheartening to see, like, DC takes a step and does Rebirth, and you're like, all right, DC, yeah, we are buying into Rebirth, and we are now, like, you've reattracted your old school fans, and you're bringing in new fans with this idea that, like, some tomfoolery happened with the background of your universe, and someone fucked up your continuity, and it's actually a story-wide thing. But then when someone, when the other part of the big two, when Marvel does the same shit...
They do a little bit of that. Somebody messed... Something happened with the Founding Avengers. But their focus isn't on that part of it, which DC did. Their focus is on other characters coming back.
But it's the same thing.
I get what you're going. It's the same thing, but they do a different focus. So Stevenson's probably right. They should stop taking cues off one another and doing the same thing over and over and over.
Like let's create compelling stories that like make it advantageous to be a fan again.
Well, we'll see where some of this goes.
We will, and I know I'm gloom and doom.
And we'll be there for you, dear listeners.
Absolutely. So I want to thank everybody for sticking through it with us so far. We definitely got off the rails enough tonight to, you know, invent an entirely new train track. But I will also say that I stopped watching Hell on Wheels because that shit got weird.
I told you. We'll talk about this afterwards, but I told you. Yeah, it anyways. Got a little weird.
But please be sure to check out Comics for Plays is coming back strong in October. We got more of the 13th Age to play.
Yes.
Tyler's going to continue to be the curmudgeon that he is as a half-orc, but all the other humans are going to put up with
it. I really like Chris's description of me as the Andrew Dice Clay of that world. I've taken that to heart.
Be sure to go check out georgetownbeer.com. Also, visit the Georgetown Brewery in South Downtown, Seattle, in order to get the last drops of Houston, as well as participate in the Hope campaign. Be sure to check out Science Nights this week, as we will have Stephen Smith back on. He was lucky enough to visit the Northwest, and I mean that as I said it. but he was here with us in studio, and be sure to check out Waiting for Players as we play a new game and talk about new Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer.
Oh, it was good.
On this most recent episode. So for all of you out there, I am Adam and Josh.
And I'm Tyler.
And I'm Lisa.
And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
I have to be so bad.